नमो विष्णु पदाय सदस्य उत्तरे श्रीमती भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नमो नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौर भगवती पुचारिणी मेरे श्रेष्ठ स्वामी वरी पुष्काटी देवी था ओम गणती नंद जन जन सिल कला तत्सु सिमल तन देन तत्सम श्री गुरु जन श्री चैतन्य महाविष्णु प्रतितम जन विठले Yesterday, we completed the 20th verse. This describes, so far this chapter has been describing how to, the process of getting transcendental knowledge, which is on different levels, the knowledge of the eternality of the soul and knowledge of Krishna's position. And then when we take both of those and apply it to work, this is the process that Krishna said is inactive, meaning the modes of material nature inactive, while the soul is active, when one is acting in Krishna's service, and the result is akarma, there are no reactions. And on the other hand, there are people who appear to be very, very active, but actually they're fast asleep, they're not doing anything, and it's just practically a dream. Sometimes if we dream a lot at night, we wake up the next morning very tired because we've done so many things, but it's all a dream what we've done. We haven't really done anything at all. So in that case, that's the external appears to be active, but it's actually only the modes of material nature that are active, and the soul itself is asleep, fast asleep. So Krishna explains that the endeavors of one whose desires, his consciousness, is free from the desire for sense gratification, means that they have perfect knowledge and they're free from sin. Because all the material, this is so hard for us to accept, that the desires that we have, they're all reactions on the material world. The desires we have are all reactions for materialistic activities that we've done previously. What we're currently desiring, we think it's so important. Why do we think it's important? It's because I want it. But it's just a reaction. This is the result of basically a sinful reaction, material desires. The mode of passion gives birth to further desires, according to what Krishna will explain later in the 14th chapter. The result of the mode of passion, action in the mode of passion, leads to increasing desires. What was so attached to our desires, what we want, this is the mode of passion. So when one is free from, whose actions are freed from material desires, but still he's acting, he's a person who's in knowledge, and also that he's not suffering from the reactions to his previous deeds because he has no material desires. Very subtle concept, actually. How to combine these things. Action without material desires. So there's two levels, because everyone in this world acts, but why do they act? Because there's no motivation to act unless they want something. But yet, and those the things that they want are products of previous inappropriate actions that they've had, and their hearts are filled with seeds of so many desires that blossom and give more seeds, weeds, had plus one, because one, I remember years and years ago, when I was staying at the Gita Nagari farm, there's this one weed in the potato patch that was so huge, they had to take it out, because if they left it another couple of weeks, it would have given thousands and thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of weed seeds. So one desire, material desire, if cultivated, will give birth to so many seeds of so many millions of seeds of other desires, which cause us to act. And actually, what these desires do, they don't cause us to act, they force us to act. They whip us into action. That's like a whip forces a horse to pull, even though the last thing he wants to do is pull. You don't see these examples in Perth, but you see them in India, you see them in Vrindavan. This last year, you feel so bad. The people, they take these bulls and they take a cart and they fill it up with heavy, 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 heavy bricks and things like that. And the last thing this poor skinny bull wants to do is pull this heavy, heavy cart with bricks. And they, very painful actually to see this, because it's making him pull beyond his capacity, but he has no choice. Why? As long as he has any strength left, he has no choice, because he's going to get beaten, forced to do it. So that's how material desires work on our consciousness. They whip us, they beat us, and force us to act. And foolishly, we're thinking, oh, I'm doing this because I want to do it. But actually, it's the mode of passion pushing us, beating us, whipping us to fulfill it. And the proof that it's not what we want is just try and stop. Just try and stop, and you see that you can't. You're being whipped, you're being beaten, and forced to act in a particular way. Just try and stop. Just like, you know, all the people smoking, drinking, eating this and eating that. Just, oh, I do it because I like it, because I want it. Just try and stop, and see are you exploiting your desire, or is your desire exploiting you? Who's driving the engine of this one? Just try and stop. So then Krishna explains that this transcendental knowledge, it can burn to ashes. And what's all the reactions that are beating us and pushing us? And what is that? Is that knowledge about Krishna, how he comes, why he comes to this world, that he is not pushed or motivated by anything material, and yet he acts. He's experiencing pleasure within. He's the Supreme Lord, outside of the control of the material energy, and knowledge of that naturally leads us to take shelter of him. And that's karma or action on the Gyan platform, or ultimately on the Bhakti platform. So 20 to 24 speak about work as akarma, or devotional service, or work that brings no reaction. This is in 20, it's the sadhaka, or the practitioner. Abandoning all attachments to the result of his activities, that means he's acting, but he's not interested in the result. Ever satisfied and independent, he performs no furtive action, although engaged in all kinds of undertakings. No reactions. It's the desire to enjoy bhunte prakriti janiha that entangles us, that gives us so much anxiety, because it's born of false ego, and all activities born of false ego cause entanglement in the material realm. Because who is the center of false ego? It's me. And who is the center of devotional service? It's Krishna. Here's Prabhupada's purport. This freedom from the bondage of actions is possible only in Krishna consciousness when one is doing everything for Krishna. A Krishna conscious person acts out of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he has no attraction for the results of his actions. He's not doing it to gain anything externally, he's only doing it for Krishna's pleasure. He is not even attached to his personal maintenance. That's quite amazing, isn't it? For everything is left to Krishna. Wow. Just anyway, whatever Krishna wants. I'm interested in his pleasure. This is called Gotripte Varanam Tata. This is called Saranagati. And this is called Surrender. Gotripte Varanam Tata means like a cow. When a cow is bought, it's given to his master. And then he has by the rope, he's held by the rope, and if the master feeds him, he eats. And if the master doesn't feed him, he doesn't eat. Nothing he can do. He's sold already. So that is the meaning of being dasa, servant of Krishna, sold. Another meaning is, of Gotripte Varanam Tata, is being under the protection of Krishna. So when we put it in that way, that if he feeds us, we eat. If he doesn't, we don't eat. It's very frightening, because we're worrying, what happens if he doesn't feed us? But the other way to look at it is, it's placing oneself under Krishna's protection by giving oneself to him. And then we ask ourselves the question, well, is he really going to protect us on me or not? But we ask that before we do it. Not that we put ourselves under his protection and surrender, and then but keep the keys to the lock behind our back just in case we don't get exactly what we want, and then we open the lock and run away. That's not real surrender. So he does his duty to the best of his ability and leaves everything to Krishna. He's not anxious, so he's not attached to his personal maintenance, for everything is left to Krishna. Nor is he anxious to secure things, nor to protect things already in his possession. He does his duty to the best of his ability and leaves everything to Krishna. Such an unattached person is always free from resultant reactions of good and bad. It is though he were not doing anything. This is the sign of akarma, or actions without fruit of reactions. Any other action, therefore, devoid of Krishna consciousness, is binding upon the worker, and that is the real aspect of vikarma, as explained here and before. 21. Such a man of understanding acts, this is a perfected person again, with mind and intelligence perfectly controlled. Perfectly controlled means focused on Krishna. Gives up all sense of proprietorship over his possessions and acts only for the bare necessities of life. Thus working, he is not affected by sinful reactions. So these verses can be understood on two different levels. One, and the level that Prabhupada is speaking about, he brings it to the point of someone on the path of bhakti. And the other way to, and so it's a very high stage. And the other way to look at it is as a person who's on the gradual path for bhakti. He's on one rung or step of the yoga ladder, and he's just detached. He understands that he's a soul, he's eternal, and he's practicing karma yoga. Just because he doesn't want to be entangled, so he's not attached to the fruit of his work, but just does his duty. But he's not necessarily a devotee, but he's detached. So he, to see that the difference in the mentalities, that a person who's on this level practicing jnana yoga, basically, you know, on the karma level, this Kama Yoga, he He has to perfectly control his mind to stop any of the motive passion from getting in, to stop any attachment to anything from entering his life. But a devotee, look at the difference in how he perfectly controls his mind. His perfect control of the mind is his attachment to Krishna. So it's completely natural, because he has attachment, loving attachment to Krishna, and naturally wants to please Krishna. His mind is naturally focused on Krishna. And the other person has to always be in careful control of his mind, which is so difficult. So difficult. Dangerously difficult. Here's Prabhupada's purpose. A Krishna conscious person does not expect good or bad results in his activities. His mind and intelligence are fully controlled. He knows that because he's part and parcel of the Supreme, the part played by him as part and parcel of the whole is not his own activity, but is only being done through him by the Supreme. And this is the pleasure of a devotee. Because everyone is looking for pleasure. So the person who's selfishly motivated looks for pleasure by acting in such a way he'll get the things that he thinks will bring him pleasure. And then the Krishna conscious devotee, his pleasure is being an instrument of Krishna, being used by Krishna. He's not attached to a particular result. He just wants to be used by Krishna and Krishna's service, and that's his pleasure. And that is the greatest pleasure. But just see, the middle person is in a especially difficult position, because he's neither attached to the material world and he's not attached to Krishna. So where is he going to get his pleasure from? He's got to completely control his mind and not be looking for pleasure in anything external or anything spiritual. So it's a very precarious, difficult position to be in. Precarious because at any moment his mind can rebel and hold on to, grasp some object of the senses and say, I want this. Even though he may not want it, but the mind, it can hold on to something. Have any of you ever had that experience? Why are you all laughing at me? You're all laughing at me because that's how I am. Because that's what the mind does. And you can even say, I don't want this thing. But the mind says, I don't care what you want. I want it. Let it go. No. How heavy the mind is, actually. It can just decide it wants something that you've decided is poison. And the mind says, I don't care, I want it. And then if one isn't strong or devoted, then the soul gets carried for a terrible ride. Terrible ride, such suffering. His whole life can be tipped over. Turned over upside down, and he can land in the patch of thorns. And he didn't want to at all. It's just the rascal crazy mind. And why does the rascal crazy mind do that? It's because it has desires. I want something. That's what desires means. I want. And how did the desires get in there? Because of previous actions. So he's suffering those desires that he has, so powerful, or reactions to things he's done in the past. And that is the worst reaction, is that you have more material desires. You know, we're afraid if we do something bad, a piano will fall on our head or something like that. But these material desires are the worst reaction in one sense, because they keep us on the treadmill of material life in the material world and suffering the consequences. So here's Prabhupada's purport. So this, a Krishna conscious person does not expect any good or bad results in his activities. His mind and intelligence are fully controlled. He knows that because he is part and parcel of the Supreme, the part played by him as part and parcel of the whole is not his own activity, but is only being done through him by the Supreme. So that's the position again of a devotee. And again, the position of a karmi non-devotee is I want, I want, I want. So his life is he doesn't have a struggle, and the perfected devotee doesn't have a struggle because he's perfected, his consciousness is focused on Krishna's pleasure. But in between people, we have to struggle. We have to struggle, and we have to hear the philosophy, and we have to think deeply about what is actually for my welfare and what is not for my welfare. And then what do we do when the mind holds on to something, wants something that we know is counter to our own welfare? What do we do? But the mind is holding on to it.
Change.
Loudly. Yeah, you have to know this is the disease. You have to recognize, oh, my disease is operating now. And take shelter of the name of Krishna and the name of devotees. But first, there'll be knowledge in there. Knowledge that this is my disease. It's not me. And just that little distance, and this is what we have to do in one sense, a distance. Oh, my mind is thinking like this now, but it's not me. A slight distance between me and the mind's desire has to be made. Follow what I mean? And not a full, because if we fully identify with the mind and what it wants, we're on the roller coaster. Have you ever been on a roller coaster? Yeah. Good fun, huh? If you like to be terrified all the time. Have you ever been on a roller coaster?
Yeah.
Fun, huh?
Life is a roller coaster.
Oh, very, very deep. Have you ever been on the other one? The one?
Yeah.
Did you enjoy yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Because I know that sooner or later I'll be safe.
You get off. That's really intelligent. I'm going to get on it, and it's so much misery. My happiness is knowing sooner or later I'll be off. That's what it's like, yeah? Yeah. Have you ever been on a roller coaster? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
Yeah? What did you enjoy about it?
Well, just the ride. You said, I knew. I won't fall off. No one has been falling off the roller coaster. I'll be safe.
Even though you're suffering, you'll be safe. But why get on if it's just that I won't? If you think about it, have you ever been on a roller coaster? I bet you really enjoyed it. Why do you, what, yes or no? Yeah. When you went back, did you go on a roller coaster?
No.
Why?
I don't know.
What do you find enjoyable about it?
The wind.
The wind. What do you like about the wind on the roller coaster? The wind hits your face. Okay. Yeah. But how about this part? How do you feel in your stomach?
Ticklish.
I also went on roller coasters, but I didn't like it. Usually people go on because they're with their friends, right? And you're afraid. No one will admit that they don't like it, that it's frightening, and they'll call you all kinds of names if you don't go on it. That's one of the main motivations, isn't it? So your friends don't call you a coward. But it's the roller coaster of life, and if you like the feeling of the wind going through your faces, going up and down, and your stomach is turning over, then you really like it. You're in the right place. But there are other ways to get pleasure too. So when the hand moves, so the devotee, his motivation is very different. He wants to be used by Krishna. That means that he's fixed in his serving mood to Krishna. He wants to serve Krishna. And he wants Krishna to use him as he likes. And that is wonderful consciousness. And there's so much pleasure in that for the soul, for the person. And Krishna is using him. He becomes the instrument of, and Krishna plays that instrument. And this is what Krishna will tell Arjuna in the Nitya Karam Bhavisavya Sachin. You, I want you to be the Namitta Karan, which means the intermediary cause. I'm going to be doing it. I'm going to cause the destruction on this battlefield, and I want you to be the Namitta Karan, the intermediate cause. I am the original cause. I think that's actually what the Namitta Karan is. And then there's the Upadan Karan. When the hand moves, it does not move of its own accord, but by the endeavor of the whole body. A Krishna conscious person is always dovetailed with the supreme desire, for he has no desire for personal sense gratification. He's that pure. He moves exactly like a part of a machine. But what's the difference? As a machine part requires oiling and cleaning for maintenance, so a Krishna conscious man maintains himself by his work just to remain fit for the action and the transcendental loving service of the Lord. He is therefore immune to all the reactions of his endeavors. So what's the difference between a person who's serving and a part of a machine? So there's Prabhupada's making the point that he fits in to Krishna's plan, like the part of the machine fits into the purpose of the whole machine. But what's the difference?
Part of the machine has no freedom of choice.
And he has no consciousness. He just, you stick the screw in there and it's in there. And it doesn't dissolve, because it's unconscious. Huh? It's just mechanical, yeah. And similarly, Prabhupada, like an animal, he has no proprietorship over his own body. So the animal doesn't have choice, but the human being does have choice. So what do you have to have that will make you place yourself in a position that you're like a machine part and or an animal? It's not very attractive, is it, from one point of view? What do you need?
Right.
You need a lot of faith. Therefore, adhoj shraddha, that's the beginning. And it's not that, okay, now I've finished, I've got my faith, and what do I go on with? Then I go on, I've passed the stage of faith. No, faith is always increasing and ever deepening. And then, what comes from faith? Then ultimately, prema. Faith, shraddha, is the bhakti like a bija in one sense. That's what it is. Seed on which bhakti is built, devotion, because you can't take this position of a willing, conscious, loving servant unless one has deep trust and affection in the kind disposition of one's master. And this accepting the mastership of Krishna over us is the great turning that the soul has to do. Not has to do, but that's what spiritual life means, this great internal turning. So if we say, well, I don't like this idea, I'm going to read another book, I'm not sure about this Bhagavad Gita book. So what we'll read another book, and the other book will tell us that we're actually God but don't know it. Oh, this is a much better book than I. Or it will tell us that you're the master and you should go out there and enjoy. But the first thing you have to do is you have to get an education if you want to be the master. And when you're in school, do you feel like you're the master? Or, huh? No. And then after you graduate, then what do you have to do to be the master?
You have to have a job.
Yeah. And then you have to have
and
they call it a master's degree. Talking about a con job. They call it a master's degree. And then what do you do after you get your master's degree? You have to
go for a PhD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you first then you have to take it, as Roger Prabhupada say, you have to take it. You have to go around and beg, please give me a job. And then after you have a job, the first thing you have is a what?
Boss.
Boss.
He's a master.
So then when do you ever get to be the master? And then you move up, and then you finally, you become the boss, maybe. And then, like your father is the boss of his business? Is he the boss? Serving the customers. When do you ever get to be the boss? I mean, then you have to end up going back to the Bhagavad Gita because you find, or at least, okay, let me be God then. At least we know he's the boss. But can we ever become God? What talking about an illusion, that's even a greater illusion. What a mess we've gotten ourselves into. We can't avoid serving. Because we're servants constitutionally, that's the meaning of dharma, that which is our constitutional position. So Prabhupada will continues here. Like an animal, he has no proprietorship over his own body. A cruel proprietor of an animal sometimes kills the animal in his possession. If the animal does not protest, nor does he have any real independence. Very frightening proposition. A Krishna conscious person fully engaged in self-realization has very little time to falsely possess any material object. For maintaining body and soul, he does not require unfair means of accumulating money. He's not greedy. He does not therefore become contaminated by such material sins. He's free from all reactions to his activities. Let's just go back to this point when Prabhupada says, a cruel proprietor of an animal sometimes kills the animal in his possession, if the animal does not protest, nor does he have any real independence. So if we're, that's what stops us from surrendering. Or one of the points that we're fearful. That cruel, because now who would surrender to that kind of a master willingly? I mean, the animal has no choice. He's got a thing around his neck and everything, and his nose, and they just pull him, and here's your master, and he can't escape. Such a heavy position. Like the goats, I saw it when I was in Dhaka. Where Dhaka is the capital city of?
Bangladesh.
I know, you know. I just wanted to see if he's learned anything in school. Now, Dhaka is the capital city of Bangladesh. Bangladesh is a country. It used to be part of India. But there was a war. And the British, they made East Pakistan, West Pakistan, East Pakistan. And then later, Pakistan was divided into two parts. One part is called Pakistan today, and the other is Bangladesh. And the capital of Bangladesh is? Very good, you got 100%. And the capital of Pakistan is? Who knows?
Islamabad,
yes. Funny, when they found Osama bin Laden, they found him in Islamabad in the army compound. I wonder how he got there. Funny how it happened to be in the army compound. Funny place for him to be, and they didn't even know. How did he get there? Isn't that quite astounding? The capital city. Funny thing. You think that's funny? It is funny to think about, isn't it? It's a funny world.
We have looked everywhere.
We looked everywhere, but we didn't expect him to be in the center of the army, where the army is. So, the cruel proprietor of an animal sometimes kills the animal. So I saw that. That was the point. I saw that the people of the Islamic faith aren't known for their vegetarianism, and they were, you'd see them all the time. They'd be pulling the goats, you know, four or five goats, you know, on strings to the unmentionable place. And the goats, they'd pull them on the little ropes, and the goats would follow along. And you think, why don't they just get away or something? I mean, why do they follow along? Because they must have some sense where they're going, but they follow along. Why? Because they have no choice. They have no choice and they follow along. So there's a part of us that perhaps doesn't trust that Krishna is actually going to take care of us. And if we don't surrender to Krishna, but who do we surrender to then? Mm-hmm. The mind. And we know our mind is going to take care of us, that it never tricks us or gives us any trouble or anything. So this is the great contradiction of life, or one of the great contradictions of life. So, yadritsya labha santushto, out of his own accord. Labha means all gain, this is text 22. Santushto, he's satisfied with whatever gain comes, yadritsya means by its free will. Whatever gain comes, okay. Whatever happens, okay. Dvandva tito vamatsara samas Siddhav asiddhav cha kritvapi na nubhajite. He who is satisfied with gain that comes of its own accord, who is free from duality and does not envy, who is steady in both success and failure, is never entangled although performing actions. The work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and who is fully situated in transcendental knowledge, his work merges entirely into transcendence. The Prabhupada and his purpose how these wonderful characteristics of someone who is beyond the modes of material nature and is beyond the typical actions of someone in this world, how it perfectly applies to the devotee, the pure devotee. A person, 24, a person who is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute, that which is offered is of the same spiritual nature. So when one is working in Krishna consciousness, because his consciousness is pure, because he's doing it for Krishna, and the things that he is sacrificing or giving to Krishna, his work, his endeavor, is pure. Because his consciousness is pure, his endeavor is pure. And then the things that he uses to please Krishna, they are also spiritualized and purified. So everything, and how he uses them, is also in Krishna's service, so it's also pure. So everything is spiritual that such a pure person does. Because the center of it is his consciousness is spiritual. And this is the key, of course, to make our consciousness right. And then the activities and everything become spiritual. And on the other hand, if our consciousness is selfish and material, then everything will be material. But yet Krishna consciousness, the processes are so wonderful. We're in touch with things that are inherently potent. What do I mean by inherently potent?
From birth they are very strong.
Huh?
From birth?
Not specific from birth, but they have this, the strength, the spiritual characteristic within themselves. Yeah, not exactly from birth, but within themselves. Like the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, like the holy names.
Sure.
Prasadam, yes. Okay. Prasadam. And what else?
Association of devotees.
Yes, and what else? What other things have inherent spiritual potency?
The soul.
Huh?
The soul.
The holy dham. So there's certain things. The holy names, the holy dham.
Tulsi Devi,
yes. Yeah, these things. The deities. they are inherently, you don't have to do anything other than contact them to derive some spiritual benefit by their spiritual potency. So even though our consciousness may not be perfect, when we engage in these activities, by the very nature of the potency of these activities, they purify the consciousness. Well, if we do other things, we only get the benefit of the level of our consciousness, the level that our consciousness is acting upon. So it's so important to purify our consciousness through these the directly, inherently spiritual potent activities. And if we don't have those prominent in our life, the hearing and chanting, remembering, etc., then everything else will become quite mundane. So therefore Prabhupada, when he was prescribing the activities for devotees, they would work hard in the day, and in the morning there would always be very strong sadhana, and in the evening there would be strong sadhana too, of hearing and chanting. It's evening arti, and the Bhagavad Gita class in the evening, and in the morning there's mangala arti, then japa, and reading the deities, and then Bhagavatam class. So they used to call that, what was the old name for that? The ISKCON sandwich. Because the sadhana was the bread, and then the and then he was the, yeah. And Sankirtan, what Sankirtan generally, in the very early days of the movement, it meant when you went out and chanted Hare Krishna in the street, and then the Brihad Bhadanga aspect of Sankirtan came, and it meant book distribution. And then what Prabhupada wanted devotees to do basically with book distributions, talk about the books. So you would talk about, if it was the Bhagavad Gita, you'd be talking about Krishna and the benefit of the Bhagavad Gita, and directly, so your consciousness would be on Krishna, because you're talking about Krishna and giving people something about Krishna, and the people would be hearing about Krishna, so you would be also engaging in inherently potent activities, spiritually potent activities. And then as this kind of shifted and went away from its essence at different times, and also Sankirtan also became painting sales. And you went through that stage too. That was also called Sankirtan, right?
Yeah.
And records and paintings and candles and stuff that one, huh?
It was Jagannath, you know,
stickers.
Yeah,
that's what was called Sankirtan. So they were things that didn't necessarily have the inherent potency of Krishna in them, like directly talking about Krishna through book distribution and things like that. So then, now there's eight verses of different kinds of sacrifices. And then we'll move into the essence of them. But what we just heard was the activities, the qualities of the akarma work were described. Where especially the last one was, everything is done for Krishna, within Krishna consciousness, and therefore everything that was touched by such a pure soul doing everything for Krishna was spiritualized. Everything was made spiritual. Because ultimately everything is spiritual. It's coming from the Supreme Spiritual. Different places, perfumes, with selling perfume with Sankirtan, carpets, candles, huh?
Clocks.
I haven't heard of that one. Clocks. Time I am.
Chocolates.
Incense.
Everything except
Prabhupada's books and the
Mooses.
Huh?
Mooses.
Mooses, yeah.
Tapestries,
not
records.
Yeah.
Key finders.
Key finders, really. The devotees are struggling, yeah. Huh?
Candles,
yeah. Huh?
I remember they were selling a lot of beautiful candles and base water.
Yeah, as the devotees are struggling to make some money for their temple. Yeah. So that's okay to sell things to make money for the temple. But it's not inherently potent. It doesn't have the inherent potency in it. You have to have your consciousness really right to do it. So these spirits, otherwise you can do it and just give the results too. So there's different levels. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
I have a question. Yesterday you mentioned that our desires come mostly from our associations. Desires are determined by association. And yesterday you mentioned that our desires actually also come from our past activities. So where is this origin of this desire to enjoy separately from Krishna? Where did it come from?
There's some free choice that the soul makes to turn his back on Krishna. And there's some enmity with Krishna in the consciousness, not wishing to accept that he's the Supreme. I want to be independent and supreme. So we, Krishna Bhule Se Jeev, Anadiya Bahi Mukhu, turn our back on Krishna. In that way, Atta Eva Maya Tari Samsa Eda Dukkha, and then we're in the material world. But the original, some use of free will, a misuse of free will, because without free will, I can know there's not love. So that's the essence of the spiritual world, is that everyone loves Krishna. So if you don't want to be there and love Krishna with him as the center, then you have to come to the material world where you can imagine yourself the center based on your false ego. So you could say that the original cause is, you could say it's enmity with Krishna, or you could say it's incredible amount of pride, even somehow or another, or you could say it's just a bad choice, or you could say it's deep illusion, sleep, supti.
And we were originally in the spiritual world before that happened.
Well, that's how Prabhupada would explain it some of the time, but it's not possible for us to understand this one, because if you try to understand, you always come up with a problem. Because if you think, well, we're originally with Krishna, and he's all attractive, and we're so happy, why, how could we have ever turned away from him? So Prabhupada's answer was that, you know, there's always free choice. But if you think, well, we were never with Krishna, we've always been in the material world, then there's another problem that comes, philosophical problem, and that's, well, who arranged it like that? And then you blame Krishna. In the first way, you say, I've made a choice, it's my fault. and then, or you can just get angry at yourself and make a right choice. And if you take the other one, the problem is, well, then he put me here, so it's all his fault. I'm not going to deal with him. What kind of a master is he? So whichever side you look at it from, that question causes you a headache. So Prabhupada will later say that it's actually, we can't understand, but Krishna understands why we are, but the real thing is to get out.
And then when we get out, you say that we don't come back. So putting all this information together, we know for sure, then seeing that we have free will, that we might not choose to.
Well, it's like the story of one time when Prabhupada had a son who was very active. And there was a fan. And the boy wanted to touch the moving fan. So if you have a little boy, a baby, almost, a 4-year-old kid, and he wants to touch the fan, what do you do? No, don't touch it, don't touch it. But he kept on wanting to touch it, and kept on wanting to touch it, and kept on wanting to touch it. So his Prabhupada told the story that his friend said, put the fan on a very low speed, and then let him touch it. And then so they did that, and he kept on wanting, and he went, and he never did that again. So, but then you could ask the question, well, what would happen if he wanted to do it again? Well, then he'll do it again. But why would he want to do it again after going through that? You know, the frightful having touched the fan. So you can say, from that point of view, of how do you know you're not going to do it, fall down again? Well, that if you want to, you always can, you know, because it's based on free will. But do you want to? Will you touch the fan again? Will you touch the fire again? Well, there's something quite inconceivable about it. That whole how we got here type of question. Because it's inconceivable because there's no time there. It's not like, the finite mind can't penetrate. Actually, you have to wait.
I have a question.
Yeah.
But why he has created a fan? I mean, you said that why he has created this earth is no earth, no place else. Fan has a use, but serious place has no use.
Why does the... That's like saying, why does the king make the prison? So why does the king make the prison?
To make them understand that what they have done is wrong, and now they have to suffer.
But why does, if he didn't, what your question would be is, if he didn't make the prison, there wouldn't be any prisoners.
Yeah.
Does he make the prison because there's going to be prisoners already, or does the prison create the prisoners, or do the prisoners create the prison, the necessity of the prison?
Yeah, prisoners have created the necessity to make a prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why? So now ask your question again.
Yeah, I don't. Okay. You're talking about the goats and.
Yeah.
Every day they get fed by the master and looked after by the master. So then I think when the master wants to move, which is part of them taking care of them. So.
Yeah.
I've heard of the number that he's talking about this point, that the tendency of the mind is always to think that the next day is going to be like the previous day.
Yeah.
So they call it, the day the goat gets slaughtered, they call it the black swan event for the goat. He's thinking that every day is going to be the same, and Martha makes an arrangement for
it. Yeah, this person's feeding me. He would never do anything. So that's a disgraceful thing to do. You get their trust by feeding them, and then you betray them in that way, isn't it? Isn't it?
Yeah, that's the way Shastri describes it.
Yeah. It's a betrayal of the natural trust.
The point the non-devotees derive from it is that you can't always predict what's going to happen because you have these black swan events, just like the goat thinks every day is going to be the same as the previous day, but there's one day the master decides now your head's going to be cut off.
So in other words, don't take anything for granted. Be in terror continuously. No security. This isn't true, but when I was in Dhaka that time, I'm prefacing by saying it's not true. I saw these, you know, the Muslim guys carrying their goats and everything, you know, with their beards. And I saw the goats had their beards like that. So I asked one of them, do you know that you're going to be a goat in your next life? And you know what he said? Nah. Nah. But I prefaced that by saying it's not true. I didn't really do that. But it's a joke. Did you laugh? I know it's true. Are you put your chin up? Yeah, no, you're not a goat. You're a nice boy.
We are responsible for all our actions, isn't it? So we are also the doer.
One of the doers. Yeah. But not the only one. Yeah.
And Krishna is the main.
Without him. But he's main in the sense that it ultimately depends on him, but he's not main in the sense that he gives us, you know, he's not, we're the main doer in another sense, but not the ultimate doer. Because it's like a child who goes to lift something very heavy, but he doesn't have the potency to lift something heavy. And then his father sees him trying to make the attempt to lift the heavy thing, and the father comes and does it for him. So if it wasn't for but you could say the father is the main doer, but if it wasn't for the son's attempt, the father wouldn't be inspired to do it. So who's the main doer? You know, it just depends which angle you look at it from. Follow what I mean?
Yeah. But yeah, because I think the previous chapter, Krishna says, I'm the doer. You know, sometimes you get caught, you know, the tendency is, Krishna is behind everything, you know, we can always say.
But then you remember that example that there's a joint doership in that sense. But our problem is we think ourselves the independent doer. But you're pointing out another problem. You think anyway, Krishna will do it. I don't have to do anything.
Because we always think of Krishna sanction.
Yeah.
So Krishna sanction is because this is sanctioned by Krishna and everything is okay. So it's a tendency that. One can get caught into
it. Yeah, everything's okay, but the question is, my consciousness okay or not?
Mm.
And that's where our free will is. So if your consciousness is okay, like the person who's being described here, then everything is okay if you're serving Krishna. But if your consciousness isn't okay, then it's different. Okay. Let's stop here. Thank you very much.